Podcast. I'm Jace.
I'm Manny.
I'm Nick.
And this episode, we're going to talk a little bit about some comic news, some movie news, maybe a quick TV item, and then we're going to dive into Rebirth Week 4. It's already been 4 weeks since the Rebirth Initiative has started from DC Comics. It shows no sign of slowing down. It's been a runaway success. I think it's fair to say that at this point. And in the interest of full disclosure, this episode's going to come out on June 22nd, Wednesday, same day these issues hit your comic store, and the same day another comic from IDW hits the comic stands, and that's Action Man number 1. And if you take a look at the Comic Source blog.com, you'll see that there were actually two episodes released today, and that other episode, I was lucky enough earlier today to talk with John Barber, who's the writer of Action Man. And I did get an advanced copy of number one, so as we record this, it's Tuesday night, it actually hasn't come out yet, but I've read it already. It's a lot of fun. It's a really, really great book. I definitely recommend checking it out. It is the $4.99 cover price, but it's worth it. It's like 35 pages. It's a really great story. Action Man's going to be a four-issue miniseries that kind of leads into the IDW big crossover event in the fall, all their Hasbro properties kind of crossing over. Action Man, according to what John told me today, is going to play a big role in that. So definitely go out and pick it up. It's a great book. So
we're sitting on top of the story of the century here.
Let's jump into some comic news. First item of news, Spider-Man Dead No More, which we've seen teaser images and trailers and hints about it for months now. It's now being referred to as the Clone Conspiracy. So on the last page of the Free Comic Book Day, Marvel Free Comic Book Day book, we saw the man in the red suit with the and Gwen Stacy standing next to him. He had kind of this jackal head kind of thing on. And so immediately, of course, everybody's speculated. It's the Spider-Man, classic Spider-Man villain, the Jackal, who's known for messing around with clones and such. Turns out that's all the speculation is true. So it's not Dead No More. It's the Clone Conspiracy. You can take a look at the link in the show notes for more details there. Not sure how I feel about it myself. You know, I've been trying recently to get back into Marvel, but I don't have fond memories of the Clone Saga. And it's funny because a lot of people make fun of the old Spider-Man Clone Saga, how terrible it was and everything. But the fact of the matter is, the reason the Clone Saga ended up dragging on as long as it did is because at the time, it was selling like hotcakes. And so it's funny now to hear people complain about it. Oh, the Clone Saga, that was the beginning to the end for great Spider-Man stories, and it got so convoluted and crazy or whatever, and it's so bad. It's such an example of what went wrong in the 90s. But man, at the time, it was really selling well, and that's the reason that it drug on for so long. Now, Nick, you're a pretty big Marvel fan. Any plans to read this Clone Conspiracy?
I looked at it. That link that you're talking about at Bleeding Cool, I was reading that article about it. And I didn't read too much into the Clone Saga back in the day. I have a buddy who swears by that Clone Saga, and he loves the Ben Reilly character that was the focal point of that storyline. He likes the whole, I think it's the Scarlet Spider is
right,
what
yeah,
came
one.
Out of that whole
yeah.
thing.
Yep.
He loves the character design behind that and everything, and he's told me a little bit about it, but I never really read the whole thing. With this new one, don't really care about the Jackal, and so I'll probably skip this one. The Amazing Spider-Man that's out right now, I haven't been reading it. I only read the first three issues and kind of dropped it after that. So I'll probably skip this one.
What about, do you read the Spider-Man title, the one that stars Miles Morales?
I read the first issue. I haven't kept up with that one. Unfortunately, the only Spider-Man title I'm reading that I'm really loving is the Spider-Gwen. Ever since that came out, I've been reading that one. And just loving the art and the writing for that character.
All right, fair enough. Well, Listeners, I'm sure I'll keep you up to date as more details of what exactly is going to go on in the clone conspiracy goes down. Especially if, you know, like in some of the teaser images we've seen Doc Ock, you know, Dr. Octopus, who, of course, was the superior Spider-Man, so could see his return. We've also seen a lot of images of Gwen Stacy and Uncle Ben. So if Marvel returns those two characters, I think it's safe to say that nothing will be sacred in the Marvel Universe anymore if those two beloved characters who've managed so far to avoid being resurrected, and I think that's a good thing. You know, if Marvel finally brings them back from the dead, then yeah, all bets are off, and I may just give up on the Marvel Universe altogether. Another Bleeding Cool article that came out this last week I found interesting, a link in the show notes, their bestseller list for the books that were released on the 15th. So this was the bestseller list as of June 19, 2016. All Rebirth, man. All the Rebirth titles are in the top 10. Civil War II is underperforming for Marvel. Not a big surprise, although I do feel like it's, you know, compared to some of the other Marvel stuff that's come out in recent years, Civil War II is decent, but DC's really been knocking it out of the park with the Rebirth titles. And there's no substitute for word of mouth, and people are hearing from other readers and other comic fans just how good the Rebirth stuff is. Meanwhile, I think a lot of Marvel fans at this point just kind of have event fatigue because it's been just one event after another, and oftentimes the previous event doesn't even end before the next one starts. And so I think that's part of the reason. As well as the price points, you know, Marvel's books are $4.99 or $3.99, $4.99, if not more. Whereas DC with the Rebirth Initiative has lowered the price of their books to $2.99. So, you know, it makes a difference. Next bit of news. So Hastings, which is a big bookseller, mostly in the central United States, Texas, and throughout the Midwest, they are an interesting idea of a store. Think Barnes & Noble, but with back issues, and you can go and rent video games there, and they buy stuff, store credit, you can, you know, do all kinds of different things. So it's an interesting business model, and apparently it hasn't really been working that well. So basically what's happened is they haven't been selling enough of their new comics. Now, I had heard, and I don't know if this is 100% accurate, but I heard that they were Diamond's single biggest account. So they're ordering thousands and thousands of books every month, and they're not all selling. You know, they have the same problems that a lot of you know, small local comic book shops have as far as, you know, trying to get readers to pick books up. But, you know, the difference being that as they accumulate all these comics, they're just sitting. And so they're in trouble. They filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. They didn't get their new books last week. And it's come to light that they owe Diamond $1.6 million. And they owe Funko, who makes the Funko Pop figures, $2.5 million. And so what's going to happen? We don't really know at this point. But it did come to light today. And there's no verification for this. It's just an anonymous worker at Hastings reached out to Rich Johnson at Bleeding Cool and said they did get their books for this week, the books that are supposed to come out June 22nd, along with the books that were supposed to come out last week. So I don't know if they struck a deal with Diamond or if they managed to get an influx of capital that allowed them to pay for the books or what. But I do know that one of the things that was speculated was what was going to happen. Hastings is obviously a huge account, as I said. They have exclusive variant covers that are only available there. They had an exclusive variant for Han Solo number 1, which came out last week, as well as another exclusive variant. I'm trying to remember what the other one was. I think maybe it was Batman number 1, perhaps. Yeah, it was Batman number 1. So those issues supposedly will be for sale tomorrow at Hastings, I assume. So it's definitely an developing story. It certainly isn't good news for the comic industry if Diamond's biggest account goes under, and especially if they leave a sizable debt. I mean, $1.6 million. When I saw that number, my immediate thought was, man, can Diamond afford to just not have that bill paid? Like, I mean, Diamond's the only distributor. What happens if they get in trouble with and they owe money to people and they can't pay? Then what? It could be a big mess. So definitely something to keep an eye on going forward. I don't know. I mean, maybe Hastings sells out to Diamond, and Diamond goes into retail and turns some of those Hastings stores into kind of a direct. How would that go over with other retailers? Probably not too well when you sit there and think about it. You know, a local comic shop that has to pay a certain amount of money for their books and their merchandise couldn't compete if Diamond basically cut them out and sold directly to the consumer. They'd not be able to offer better discounts and better prices. Yeah, maybe that's not a great idea at all. Next bit of news, Nicolas Cage went on a buying spree at Amazing Las Vegas Comic-Con this last weekend. Supposedly spent about $1 million. Did you guys see any of the pictures?
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
I mean, he's standing there holding in his hands, and not gently from the looks of the pictures I saw, Amazing Spider-Man number one, Hulk number one, Avengers number four, these iconic comics, and they're like, no, don't hold him like that, dude. So supposedly, you know, he used to be like a giant comic fan, and of course he's had his problems with the IRS and money problems as well.
He had to sell off a castle.
Yeah, it was terrible. I felt so bad for him. But yeah, he had an Action Comics number one of the highest graded known copies, and it was stolen from him at one point, and then he got it back and ended up selling it to kind of cover some of that debt, and he sold off a lot more of his collection as well. Kind of seemed like he lost the bug. Well, maybe he's gotten it back. You know, he lives in Vegas, so that's kind of a local show to him. And he went, spent a lot of money on comics, bought like a $3,000 Ghost Rider painting and everything. So, Nicolas Cage, spending some money. We've also seen... What's that?
If only one day I could become like that, where just I can go in, just, you know what, I feel like a Hulk number one and Amazing Fantasy 15, and just, you know, buy a bunch of limited edition comics like that. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'm telling you, the show to go, I mean, in a way, I'm kind of surprised. I don't know if he contacted dealers and told them that he was looking to pick up some high-quality books. And I've never been to the Amazing Las Vegas show. I don't know how many, you know, high-dollar books they keep around. But, you know, I certainly wouldn't expect to see, like, an Action Comics number one there. It's just the show's just not big enough, and that, I mean, somebody could plan a heist or something. But, man, I'm telling you, San Diego Comic-Con, you want to talk about seeing some, I mean... I saw a case there that had three Action Comics number one in it, a Batman number one, a Detective 27, an Amazing Fantasy 15, and an Amazing Spider-Man. They were all right there in the same case, man. It was a sight to behold. So, yeah, it would be cool to be able to someday just walk in and go, I'll take that one, that one, that one. Yeah, probably never happened. Marvel has been releasing teaser images for Marvel Now. Not the 2012 Marvel Now, but the fall 2016 Marvel Now. I mean, they can't even be bothered to come up with new names for these new initiatives anymore. So it's beyond ridiculous. Yeah, Marvel's going to be relaunching again with all new number ones coming out of Civil War 2. Like I said, they've been releasing some teaser images. Heroes Divided. I don't know. You can look at the link in the show notes, an article on IGN that talks about... in more detail what Marvel has planned and some speculation on that. So, yeah, at this point, they seem to be having multiple number ones a year rather than, you know, one each year. It's clearly getting out of hand. I wish they'd rein it in with the number ones. Speaking of number ones, there's a new Fables series launching. It's supposed to be an ongoing monthly series from Matthew Sturgis, Dave Justice, and Travis Moore. Set in the Fables universe, it's going to be called Ever After. It has the blessing of Fables creator Bill Willingham, and it's basically kind of the world of Fables. That magical world has kind of become public knowledge, and the magic in the world is kind of threatening. It's become a threat, and so this is like a super spy series set in the Fables universe with this organization trying to protect the general populace from the magic of the Fables world. So I'm sure that's good news for all you Fable fans out there. And the last item of news I want to mention, Newsarama had a really good article the other day about the big death that's been foreshadowed in Civil War II, number 3. And their theory is it's going to be Tony Stark. There's 5 reasons, actually 6. They updated the article, but the title is still 5 Reasons Why Tony Stark is Toast. And it's a really good article. Go and read it if you want. They make a lot of good points, good valid points, and it'll be interesting to see if it is Tony Stark. And the other thing that'll be interesting to see is if it is Tony Stark, will that be a big enough deal to help boost the sales of Civil War II, even to the point that I would think if it does grab the attention of the comic book reading public, that they're all going to go back and seek out issues 1 and 2, because as I mentioned before, the sales on those really haven't been that great. You have any thoughts on that, Nick?
As you're saying that, like if that does end up being true, then it could maybe hurt the sales for the Iron Man book going forward, because there might be some people out there that hear that, you know, Tony Stark is dead. So what's Brian Michael Bendis going to do in the Iron Man title? The international Iron Man, as well as Invincible, I'd imagine people are just might get kind of disinterested and just drop that book if that seems to be the case. If he is dead,
yeah, I could see the international Iron Man, being that it's kind of telling flashback, that it could continue to tell that story of Tony's, past. The other book, the Invincible Iron Man, I don't know. I mean, the teenage girl we saw, the college-age girl that kind of built her own armor, I guess she could become the star of the book.
Right, From
my perspective, I would stop reading it if that were the case. It just does not interest me at all. It's a story I've seen 1,000 times,
Right.
Veteran hero dies, whatever. Super green, no business being a hero, girl or boy or whatever, takes up the mantle, kind of has to learn on the job. Yeah, been there, done that. Zero interest in that.
Yeah, and a lot of fans out there, they don't like the fact that they already kind of messed with the legacy of the character with Howard Stark not being his true dad or whatever.
Right.
And so with them, keeping on messing with this character, it just seems to be a little bit too much.
Yeah, plus, this girl is a person of color, and so if that comes to pass, people are going to say, oh, here goes Marvel again, trying to satisfy those that want to see more diversity, because, Iron Man, arguably the most well-known Marvel character at this point because of the success of the Iron Man movies and the success overall of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So take the rich white guy who's the hero and replace him with a young black female. Marvel's just trying to ring that diversity bell again. We heard complaints when Steve Rogers got replaced. We heard complaints when Thor got replaced. And so here we go again. And even to the point where people that want to see more diversity in comics are like, stop taking pre-established characters and changing them to these minorities and females and what have you, and just create new characters that are that right from the beginning. So
right.
What do you think, Manny? Tony Stark's death, good move or no?
I don't know. Marvel's, like you guys have been talking about, they've been messing with their characters left and right, and it's kind of the opposite of what DC's doing now. I hate to compare the two, but I mean, that's really what I'm going to do. They're really going to be messing with their audience, because people want Tony Stark as Iron Man. I can't see him seeing Iron Man as anyone else. Even I thought it was cool when Pepper fought him in a suit in Superior Iron Man and whatnot. But well, Rhodey's dead now too, so you can't even have him be Iron Man, because they took him out as well. yeah, I think it's a bad move. And it's just going to further complicate things with Marvel now in the near future. I mean, they don't have Wolverine anymore. They keep killing and bringing back Spider-Man characters. So, I don't know.
Yeah, it gets, you know, like, I felt when they changed up the character and for the Thor title, I thought that was really good. When they did it with Captain America and had Sam take up the mantle as the new Captain America, I thought that was cool. But, like, when you keep doing it over and over again, and you know, you're even rehashing this whole Marvel Now thing, like, it gets a little bit, you know, just too much. And like you were saying earlier, a lot of people are getting into this event book type fatigue, and I'm kind of at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought that Sam Wilson needed to grow out of Falcon. I mean, don't get me wrong, Falcon's an okay character, but him kind of going into the, you know, a type of Captain America, I was great. I was fine with that. And just like you said with Thor, I thought that was great. But you got to do it with the purpose, and you just got to stop doing it to sell new number ones or to start a new series. I mean, it could only take you so far before you've mixed up your universe so much that you're going to have to, what is that thing Marvel likes to do a lot? Reboot. It's just not great for the fans, especially the longtime readers. Because, for example, me, I don't pick up Marvel books because I don't know where to begin and I don't know where to end. The only thing I read now is Ant-Man because that seems the only thing that really makes sense to me. Other than that, I have a ton of X-Men titles, a ton of different Avengers, and then there's Uncanny Avengers, All New Avengers, Avengers. Mm-hmm. I mean, the titles go on and on and on. And the Hulk was, I think, was my biggest complaint because a totally awesome Hulk did not work at all for me.
Me neither.
Amadeus Cho was a great character, and then the storyline was pretty good, but that's not the Hulk. I mean, they could have made him anyone else.
Yeah, I thought so too. I thought the character design for that was really shoddy, and, you know, the stupid hairstyle that they gave him. I felt Amadeus Cho just, that wasn't a good path for that character to become the Hulk or whatever. It's just, do something else, Marvel. Like, we don't need new number ones, and we don't need all these historic characters, you know, being replaced by all these random, you know, sidekicks or side characters. It's getting old.
Just tell good stories.
Yeah.
Books will sell. Yeah. Just tell good stories. I mean, DC Rebirth is an excellent example of that. A couple of those things you mentioned, Manny, were things that were actually mentioned in the article about why they think it will be Tony Stark, as far as Rhodes being gone, Tony Stark being so integral to the Marvel Universe, at this point, Iron Man is probably the flagship character, you know, leader of the Avengers and what have you. And their contention in the article is that's exactly how they could shake up the universe. It would leave such a vacuum if Tony Stark is gone, because no more Reed Richards, no more Bruce Banner, so who steps up? And it definitely would shake things up for sure.
I mean, it really seems like they're trying to put Ms. Marvel at a way higher place than she's ever been, which I you know, it's fine, but you can't get rid of Iron Man. He's
well, there's no Iron Man movie. There's no Iron Man movie coming up. There is a Captain Marvel movie coming up. There is a Black Panther movie coming up. Could perhaps
be
a character that they elevate in status to take the place of Tony Stark. Got to sell those movie tickets, man.
No, I know, but you can't. I don't know. It's
I can see where
you're going with it, because I mean, in Civil War issue 2, he does a lot of things that are kind of uncharacteristic of him, and. It looks like Civil War is going south, but I have to wait till issue 3 to see how far it goes.
Hey, in case you didn't know, Marvel, when it comes to Marvel these days, it's Marvel Cinematic Universe first and comic book second.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's gonna hurt in the long run.
I guess we'll see. Speaking of movies,
you will give the people of Earth an ideal to strive towards. They will race behind you. They will stumble. They will fall. But in time, they will join you when the sun comes.
Movie news. So, Justice League details announced. You had to be all over this today, right, Manny?
Yep.
So, we found out who the main villain is going to be, namely Steppenwolf, who is kind of the leader of Darkseid's army. We also found out from Ben Affleck that Justice League will have a president, will have a presence at San Diego Comic-Con this year.
Ooh, a president.
Specifically, when asked, Ben Affleck said, yeah, we'll be there. Who we encompasses, who can say. We also know some of the plot details. We know who Willem Dafoe is going to be playing. So we also saw the logo. So a lot of cool details. I'm pretty excited now that Ben Affleck is aboard. The less influence Zack Snyder has over the movie, the better, in my opinion. It seems Warner Brothers is finally starting to come around to that way of thinking. You know, we got rid of David Goyer. Now, if we can just get rid of Zack Snyder, maybe we can get the DC Cinematic Universe back on track. And with the Suicide Squad movie coming out, definitely looking forward to that. So
that's going to be their big test.
If Suicide Squad
like does not do well and the story just, you know, is really bad, like Batman versus Superman, then that's going to really hurt them for this Justice League movie.
No, for, I think for the entire cinematic universe, it'll definitely hurt them. But David Ayer makes some pretty good movies. That's really what has me full of hope. But yeah, you're definitely right there. That's really going to be the make or break movie, I think. Even more than Batman v Superman, because it'll prove that you can give creative freedom to some degree to the directors and still keep a cohesive universe. Because it sounds like a lot is going to kind of spring off of there as well. So
they gave quite a bit of creative freedom to Zack Snyder, and it didn't really work out too well, but. I think the big thing with Suicide Squad is the fact that it's been a film that Geoff Johns has been heavily involved in developing and working closely with David Ayer, and now that he's been given a much greater control over the DC Cinematic Universe, if Suicide Squad does well, that is going to boost Warner Brothers' confidence in Geoff Johns, and they can only increase his influence, and as his influence increases, I think Zack Snyder's will decrease. And you know, let's face it, at this point, Man of Steel, not a great success, and even though I think financially Batman versus Superman did better than Man of Steel, it certainly wasn't a critical success. And although I thought it was better than Man of Steel, a lot of people felt it was worse, and it certainly didn't perform as well as Warner Brothers expected it to, and it didn't do for the DC Cinematic Universe what they needed it to do. And so
I have to say that Man of Steel pissed me off less than Batman vs. Superman. But you liked Batman vs. Superman better.
Much, Jace. Much better.
Wow, okay. That's interesting.
I've gone on record extensively on this podcast about the problems I have with Man of Steel, so I'm not going to rehash it. We'll talk about it at a later date, Nick, and I'll let you know where I'm coming from, and maybe you'll have a better understanding. Be interesting to see if I could flip it around and make you realize that Batman vs. Superman was the better of the two films.
Yeah,
so
Manny, your thoughts on the Justice League details?
I find it interesting that they still haven't cast Steppenwolf due to the fact that they're already filming. But I'm not sure if they took a break or what's going on, because I think I read that some of the people aren't due back until like August or September to film. I found it really interesting that William Dafoe was playing Vuko. That was pretty cool.
Well, we don't, I mean, maybe Steppenwolf has been cast, and they just are keeping it hush hush.
Oh, I don't know. They said one of the notes that I saw was that he hasn't been cast.
Okay.
And the let me see, what else did I see? The one thing that I kept seeing everywhere that I thought was funny was that it's a standalone movie that will have a lighter tone, a fun ensemble focusing on the team coming together to take on a coming threat. So, yeah, it's,
that is interesting.
But the fact that, you know, it's going to have three mother boxes, Earth, Atlantis, and Themyscira is pretty interesting. So you're going to, what really gets me is I am so scared of how they are going to do underwater filming or the underwater world, because that is not going to be easy. The way that they showed Aquaman very briefly in Batman v Superman, yeah, was not good at all. He looked like he was gonna die. So
you know, the Abyss was quite a while ago, and that was done extremely well. So the technology is there. I'm not gonna worry about that. It is interesting. I do find it interesting that the lighter tone, whatever, because what a lot of people have pointed out, now that we know Steppenwolf is the main villain. Now, I know you didn't read the Earth 2 World's End weekly series that came out last year, right?
No, I didn't.
So, the main villain in that book, it's Darkseid, but Steppenwolf for the first half of the series, because he is preparing Earth 2 for Darkseid's arrival. And the other thing that happens early in that series, which is totally amazing, is that Superman is dead. He's resurrected, and he's fighting for Darkseid. He's fighting for Steppenwolf. So, obviously, you see the similarities. This Justice League movie is going to start. Superman is dead. Steppenwolf is most likely preparing the Earth for the coming arrival of Darkseid, which will probably happen in the next Justice League movie.
Which makes sense that you say that. And then really quick, like, Manny, I got a question for you, because being that I've read Marvel for a long time, I don't really know Steppenwolf at all. With it makes sense that you say, like, maybe he's probably prepping things for Darkseid, because there were some deleted scenes in the Batman versus Superman with Lex Luthor, where he had some visions of, like, demons and everything that was apparently demons from, Planet Apocalypse or whatever. So it definitely makes sense that they're setting that up. However, Manny, if you could kind of briefly explain, like, who Steppenwolf is, because I don't quite understand where he comes from.
Well, it just like, well, he comes from Apocalypse, and
okay.
He's obviously part of the New Gods, and he is. Let me just make sure I'm going to give you the right information. Like Jay says, he's the leader of the military of Apocalypse. Yeah, the general, and apparently, let me see.
I mean, he's immortal. He's a New God. So he's just.
Did he come out of the New Gods? Because New Gods is a series I still need to read.
Yeah, he's one. According to his Wikipedia page, he is one of the New Gods.
Yeah,
and he's
by Jack.
Go ahead, Jace.
Yeah, created by Jack Kirby. Just just generally a badass kind of guy who doesn't take crap from anybody, and perfectly suited.
He was in Darkseid War briefly when Darkseid was getting his army ready to face. Anti-Monitor. He's one of the first ones they called over to head out there.
Yeah, so I think he's well suited. Just because his power, he's like super strong. He has this really cool axe that he uses. So his powers will like translate visually onto the screen very well. It's not like some fantastical powers that are going to require a lot of CGI. And, you know, he looks relatively human and normal. So I think the visually on screen, it'll work really well. But it's interesting that, like Manny said, they're talking about how it's going to have a lighter tone, because it seems like it's taken a lot of cues from this weekly, you know, Earth 2 World's End weekly series. And that was in no way light or uplifting or happy or funny. It was a brutal series about the death of a world where billions died. They were unable to be saved. So, and having Superman be resurrected by the power of Darkseid to fight for Darkseid was, I mean, he kicked the crap out of quite a few people. It was a sight to behold. So, if that's how he is resurrected in the DC Cinematic Universe, it'll be interesting to see how they free him from Darkseid's control.
Yeah, it's gonna make for a good movie. But
you better get out there and buy all the back issues you can right now while they're still in the quarter bins.
Yeah, Earth 2. I really need to pick up the trade for New Gods. That's definitely a book series I've been wanting to read.
Would I
start there for Steppenwolf?
Yeah, probably the old New Gods series.
Yeah, the old one.
The one by Jack
Kirby. Okay.
The one that came out.
Yeah, the interesting thing that with all the New Gods, and which of course includes Apocalypse and all of those characters, was I was looking at Comics Explained, and one recurring theme was the fact that Jack Kirby didn't really finish the characters off. He went back to Marvel, so there's a lot of loopholes and things that were kind of left out in the open that writers and movie writers can kind of make it their own, because there is no real answer to what the original characters were meant to be or do.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Maybe Geoff Johns in the cinematic universe can really explore that.
Yeah, just as long as he doesn't let Zack Snyder do it, because that's going to be awful. But definitely Geoff Johns. If someone's going to finish that off, I think Geoff Johns would be the one. I know I'm jumping the gun, and we're not even supposed to be talking about this, but for the next movie, I really hope we get characters like Orion and like maybe Mr. Miracle coming to help out and showing helping out the guys to defeat him and things like that. But yeah, a lot of little plot points that were definitely have me a lot more excited about this than before, because I mean, the rumors that have been flying left and right about the movie, a lot of them ended up being bogus. But all of this seems pretty solid, and the fact that they invited so much media over to pretty much set it all straight, I thought was a good move. And Parademons, everybody loves Parademons.
Awesome.
Did you see that they're gonna have a jet called the Flying Fox?
No, I did not.
Yeah,
Bruce. Did not hear about this either.
Yeah, Bruce Wayne is going to build a jet called the Flying Fox for the team to use, kind of like the X-Wing, the X-Jet.
Wow.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah, cool. And then Batman is also going to have a new vehicle called the Nightcrawler that was designed by his dad.
The Nightcrawler.
Yeah, and then the last bit of news that brought this up, then I'll stop talking about it, that I found really interesting. Was we all know that Jason Momoa is Aquaman, who is also Khal Drogo from Game of Thrones. But today also it was announced that Christopher Hivju, I think that's how you pronounce his last name, he's being cast as an ancient Atlantean king. And then I don't know if you watch Game of Thrones or not, but that's the main wildling that's on Jon Snow's side.
Oh, no way. Are you serious? Where'd you read this?
Well, it was all over. It was all over my Twitter and Facebook. But
kidding.
It's on.
I did not hear about that. That is really cool to hear.
Yeah.
So he's going to play Arthur Curry. I'm sorry. he's looking to play.
It doesn't specifically say his name, but it says an ancient Atlantean king.
God, I'm trying to think who that would be. I'm looking that up right now.
Well, it could be the ancient king that we saw in the Throne of Atlantis storyline. The storyline that Geoff Johns wrote before he left the Aquaman book.
I'm thinking, all right, so I guess most of Atlantis is going to be Game of Thrones characters, which I'm not mad at all.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I still don't get the whole Game of Thrones thing, but that's a conversation for another day.
I work with my adoptive sister for the DEO to protect my city from alien life and anyone else that means to cause it harm. I am Supergirl.
So the big TV news that came out today, Linda Carter is going to have a major role in Supergirl Season 2. She's going to be playing the president. A female president. It's going to be Linda Carter. And a recurring role, so not just in one episode or two episodes or whatever, but she's going to be on the show throughout the season. So what do you think about that, Manny?
I think that's pretty cool, bringing back some of the older characters. We saw that it worked out with the older Flash playing Barry's dad, and then also the Lois and Clark Superman as Kara's adoptive dad. On The Flash, also having Mark Hamill come back as the trickster. It's really cool because it not only it gives you a chance to I guess celebrate the past, but also the new audience, it gets them to look up at least what those people did for the TV. Because I'm assuming, I don't know, I'm too young, that the Wonder Woman show was a big deal for a little while.
It was.
Am I right?
It was a big deal for a little while. And then even after it went off the air, when it was in syndication, I mean, I was too young to watch it when it first came on, but I definitely remember seeing it in syndication. And yeah, I mean, it's Linda Carter. Everybody loves Linda Carter, and a lot of that is due to her role as Wonder Woman. And the show really didn't last that long. It was only on for like 3 or 4 seasons. So I think it's great. I think it's really, really cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, the only thing that my only complaint, maybe it was too expensive and we don't really know the details, is it would have been nice to get the guy from Smallville to play Superman.
Oh, yeah, Tom Welling. Well,
yeah.
I don't mind them going with somebody different just because you kind of don't want that baggage. You know, this clearly is a different show, a different direction, different kind of universe. And that's
yeah,
not to say
I can
they couldn't
see that.
Bring Tom Welling in later. They've already established in the DC TV universe that there is a multiverse there. Smallville exists in a different plane, different dimension, different universe.
So you're going to have Supergirl Monday, Flash Tuesday, Arrow Wednesday, Legends of Tomorrow Thursday, and why don't they just finish off the week and have like a Justice League Dark type show on Friday? We'll bring back Constantine, who was awesome.
That'd be amazing.
Give me some Satana and some Swamp Thing, and I'll be good.
Give me some Dead Man.
Yeah, there you go.
That'd be awesome.
Well,
hey, really quick, guys. So, like, as you guys were talking about Supergirl, just I wanted to chime in about, because I ended up looking up this ancient Atlantis king or whatever. And so, Jace, like you were saying, I think he did first appear in the Geoff Johns New 52 reboot. It says here that possibly the Dead King, which was Atlan, the first king of Atlantis,
yep,
where he was betrayed by his brother Orin and by the people of Atlantis, where Orin was an ancestor of Aquaman.
Right.
So maybe that's the guy.
It could be. It's interesting that they're to have such a high-profile person, well-known person in that role. Clearly, there's going to be something going on, and how much room is there? Perhaps it's just introducing him, and it'll be a very minor subplot that will then lead into the Aquaman movie, would be my guess. Because clearly they're not.
Yeah, maybe.
They're not. I mean, that story that's in Aquaman, the Aquaman comic, the New 52 Aquaman, the last storyline that Jeff Johns wrote in that book before he left, is a big sweeping story, and it would very much take a movie all on its own to tell that story. So I don't think there's any way they could fit it into a Justice League movie. But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if this is just a way to introduce it, and then, you know, to learn more about that, you know, watch the Aquaman movie.
Yep.
Please do note, this is no ordinary comic book. It is in permanent condition. If you spill soda on it, the drops fly off harmlessly onto lesser comics.
Oh.
Yes, you are quite correct to gasp.
All right, now into our comic spotlight for the episode. We're going to be talking about the Rebirth books coming out this week. Let's start with Action Comics number 958. Let's start with you, Manny. What'd you think? Oh, wait. Real quick.
I thought I'd have...
Hold on. Real quick before you start, I should give the creative team.
Oh, yeah.
So written by Dan Juergens. The art is by Patrick Zercher. And... the colorist is someone I'm not familiar with, Ulysses Areola, Arola,
Areola,
Areola.
I think it's Areola.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, Areola.
Bang up job, I thought by all parties. So go ahead, man.
Yeah, let's start with that artwork. Artwork was awesome. But I kind of had mixed feelings about this issue. The action was great, and I thought the point they made in noticing that Doomsday is not only stronger, but now he's actually like being more tactical, and that was kind of a surprise to them, was kind of cool. But other than that, none of my questions that I had from the first issue got answered. As a matter of fact, it just made it worse. Especially with them pleading to Clark to all right, man, like, we get it, you're Clark, like, turn into Superman already and help them out. And then nothing happens because he's just Clark Kent. but I love the action, the Doomsday action. It's just classic, but more questions than answers, and that was a little bit frustrating.
All right, Nick.
Yeah, kind of like what Manny's talking about. Artwork on this was really, really impressive. I've never heard of Patrick Zercher, but I want some more Zercher in my reading, because this guy's really, really good. Loved his work in it. There's some really impressive splash pages throughout it. Like Manny was saying, the Doomsday action scenes were really well done. The only thing, though, is it's kind of a bummer that we're having to go through this whole Doomsday fight again, where we just got done seeing the atrocity in the Batman vs. Superman movie with Doomsday. Now we're getting this whole fight that Dan Juergens is doing all over again. However, the dynamic with Lex Luthor helping out and being in the super suit is kind of interesting, and, you know, kind of makes me want to keep reading just to see where their relationship goes between Lex and Superman now. And then the I think it was kind of right in the middle of the book, they showed Mr. Oz again, which I'm thinking it's Ozymandias. I don't know what you guys think, but it's got to be Ozymandias. He kind of shows up, and he's kind of watching his TV screens, this whole fight take place. And so they're teasing the whole Rebirth, kind of tying that whole thing into it. Which I want to know more about. I think that's kind of a cool concept that they are doing that with some of these titles. And then again, like Manny was talking about, how they have this third Superman, this Clark Kent, who apparently can fly, but he doesn't want to. He doesn't want to get involved. Like, I don't get that part of it. So far, like, I'm liking it. It was a great cliffhanger at the end, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear.
What do you think, Jace?
It's interesting to hear your perspective, you know, coming into Rebirth now, not having been a regular DC reader, because a lot of the things you're wondering about, you know, if you go back and read what's been going on in the Superman titles, you kind of have a better understanding. And yeah, Luthor's been on the side of Angels ever since the Forever Evil event, which was 2 years ago, which, everybody who's a DC reader, been reading Justice League, has been, you know, waiting for the other shoe to fall, so to speak, and for Luthor to kind of revert to his ways. I mean, he's still an arrogant jerk. You know, he still isn't what you would think of as the classic hero, but he's definitely been trying to do the right thing for quite a while now. That being said, I think, you know, this, now the Superman in this book is the pre-Flashpoint Superman, and he was willing to, even though he completely doesn't trust Luthor at all and believes him to completely be, you know, evil to his core, he's willing to stay hidden. And it's not until Luthor goes so far as to put the super shield on and to wear the S, that's where he takes it upon himself. Okay, I have to reveal myself to the world. This is a step too far. It's currently was the line in the sand for him. And so now, yeah, he's going to reveal himself.
And then
he exists.
Have you seen Patrick Zercher, artist on any other books? Is this a new guy?
No, he's been around for quite a while, actually. But I don't know that he's ever worked on any Marvel books. He's done, DC work in the past. He's worked on some of their weekly series, in the past. I think he worked on the New 52 Futures End weekly book. He was part of that art team. He also has been on Green Arrow most recently. He's also done some work for Valiant. I think he was Archer and Armstrong, if I remember. No, Shadow Man. He was on Shadow Man when that book first launched. So yeah, he's not totally new, but this is probably, you know, being on Action Comics is probably his most high profile work.
Yeah. What'd you think of his work in this one? Or so far anyway, these two first issues.
I liked it. It's not the best work I've seen from him, and I don't know if, like, honestly, his work in Shadow Man I thought was better than what's done here. But there he had an inker, so it might just be an issue of you know, having his style, you know, blend in better when someone else inks him rather than him inking himself. Or it may be that he didn't even ink himself, that he works all digitally. I don't know. I've never had the opportunity to meet him or talk to him about his process. But it's great art. Don't get me wrong. It's probably just not my favorite art of his.
Yeah, just not your kind of style.
Yeah, no. I mean, I love the style. I love everything about it. It's just, you know, I'd probably give it, like, an 8 out of 10, whereas I think that his Shadow Man work is probably like a 9 or 9.5 out of 10 for me. That book is just
okay.
Same thing with the Ozymandias, that character, Mr. Oz. He has been around in the Superman title for a while, introduced by Geoff Johns when Geoff Johns was on that book. And yeah, the speculation is now that the Rebirth has come out, the Rebirth 80-page giant introducing the Watchmen into the regular DC universe. So yeah, that's definitely the speculation there. But again, more questions than answers. As far as the third Clark Kent, yeah, don't know what's up with that. That's again, like Manny said, that's more questions than answers. Can he fly? Does he have the, you know, ability to fly? Does he have any powers whatsoever? You know, we know recently in the DC universe, Clark Kent was outed as being Superman. And so, of course, everybody knows that Clark Kent is Superman. So if a Clark Kent shows up, obviously everyone's going to assume he has powers. But who is this Clark Kent? Man, we have no idea at this point. So I thought the issue...
And the inclusion of his family, like, you know, how his wife, Lois, and his son are watching on TV... and they're doing that in Action as well as the regular Superman title. I think that's a pretty a good idea from Dan Jurgens, is including that family, you know, just because, like, I have kids, so I think it's really interesting seeing that perspective.
Yeah, now that, so that was the Lois and Clark 8-issue miniseries that Dan Jurgens did that spun out of the Convergence event. So that's the pre-Flashpoint Lois that, you know, that's married to the pre-Flashpoint Superman, the one that chose to reveal himself. And yeah, apparently they've been living in the New 52 all along, just staying hidden. And as I said, you know, Lex Luthor putting on the shield kind of forces that Superman to reveal himself. And the whole reason he was staying hidden is because he was trying to protect his family. He was trying to protect Lois and his son. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens now that there's there, apparently there's going to be two Lois Lanes in this universe, two Clark Kents, but only one Superman. I don't know. It's like Manny said, there's a lot more questions than answers. So I don't mind that this issue is mostly action and we're not really getting any answers yet. But I'm not going to be willing to wait that much longer. You know, a couple more issues and I'm going to want to start finding out what's going on. Otherwise, it's going to, for me, it's going to pull me out of the story too much for me to actually enjoy what's going on. And I probably would end up stepping away from the title until some answers, I hear, oh yeah, they revealed this or they revealed that, and I'll go back and kind of binge read it. So I guess we'll wait and see. As far as rehashing of Doomsday, yeah, I kind of agree with you there, Nick. You know, we had the Superman Doomed big storyline
in
52.
That's right.
We had Doomsday in the movie recently. I'm never a big fan of bringing villains, especially a villain like Doomsday. He's kind of a one-trick pony. You know, they made a villain so powerful that he could kill Superman. And so every time he comes out, Superman has to find, like, a new way to defeat him just based on what Doomsday's powers are. And it's, so you can only tell that story so many times before it gets real repetitive. Mm-hmm. But I do agree with you, Manny, that it's interesting that this version of Doomsday seems to be able to strategize. So that definitely makes him even more formidable of a foe. Well, let's talk about Aquaman number one next. Why don't you go first this time, Nick?
Yeah, this one I was really excited about when I saw that Dan Abnett was writing it. This issue I felt was a lot better than the Rebirth issue that came out, I think, 2 weeks ago. The thing that got me into Aquaman a while ago was, I think it's like his arch enemy is Black Manta. Would I be correct on that? Like, yeah, Black Manta is an arch enemy of his.
Yeah.
So I love Black Manta. I love the character design. I think it's really weird and it fits really well for a villain that's under the sea. And this issue kind of, you know, shows Black Manta as a force to be reckoned with. I thought this was really interesting how what they got going on to continue from the last book, where Arthur and his wife Mara are really trying to develop this diplomacy between the Kingdom of Atlantis and all the land dwellers on Earth. And so they have this this big what did they call it in the book? That's right off the harbor of Boston. An embassy, a big old, you know, Kingdom of Atlantis embassy. And they invite military and other diplomats in there. And Black Manta ends up causing explosion during this big meeting and everything. And there's some really... Again, this theme of some really good cliffhangers in these books this week, where Black Manta ends up shooting Mara, so we're not too sure what's going on with Mara, I thought it was a really strong debut so far for Aquaman. The Brad Walker art on this is really interesting too. I think he brings a really good art style for these type of characters and everything, and And I want to see more Black Manta, man. I'm really digging it so far.
All right, Manny, you're up. What do you think?
I liked it a lot. The artwork, I only enjoyed when he did Black Manta. Like the splash page of him coming forward when he's blowing up the bombs
was
amazing. Mm-hmm. And then other than that, some of the faces kind of threw me off. A couple of Amira's and then a couple of Aquaman himself. But as far as the story, I think this is really, really interesting because I've said a lot about how I love the relationship that Aquaman and Mira have together, and how it always seems that Aquaman does so much better with Mira by his side or right behind him, supporting him in what he does. So going forward, I am very interested to see what they're going to do with her hurt. How does Aquaman respond, especially now that he's not necessarily going to have to worry about just Black Manta himself, but he has to worry now about the political implications of having his embassy blow up with so many representatives from around the world that already aren't very happy with Atlanteans, and how is that all going to play out? Because it seems like he's going to be able to take care of Black Manta pretty quick as he usually does, but how does he handle the political consequences of him being attacked there, and without Mira by his side to kind of guide him and just support him in his decisions? Does he become more ruthless, or does he make bad decisions or more rushed decisions? I'm definitely hooked in it. I'm just not too sure about this artwork.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you make. I can definitely see that with the how he draws the faces in this book and everything, and the hair that's just kind of all over the place. Mara's hair as well as Arthur's hair is just kind of messy and just all over the place. And then, but the romance part of it, like I guess I could do without. Like I could kind of care less about those scenes, but. I want more of him fighting these villains like Black Manta. And then the other thing that I felt was kind of confusing, maybe it'll happen in other issues, on the cover, that is Ocean Master that's on the cover, right?
Yep.
Off to the right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so yeah, so maybe, I guess, you know, like Manny, like you were saying, Black Manta will maybe be like a two-issue type thing where he ends up, you know, getting rid of him pretty quickly, and then Ocean Master Pop probably kind of steps in after that.
Yeah, I mean, Ocean Master is always there, you know, in some form or another, being that he's Aquaman's half-brother, so I'm sure it won't go too long before we see him. Mm-hmm. I like the issue as well. Let me address the art first. I'm a huge Brad Walker fan. You know, I own original Brad Walker art. I've met Brad several times. I consider him a friend. But yeah, I have to agree with you guys. There were certain images, specifically where Aquaman's face just looked a little off to me.
Right.
But the rest of it was done so well. It just makes me wonder if and it didn't, I mean, it pulled me out of the story, and I found myself wondering, I wonder if Brad is trying something different here, or what exactly is going on, because that never happened in his Sinestro run, ever, that I can remember. And he has the same inker here, so I'm not sure if he's just trying something different or what's going on there. But it's a minor quibble, you know. I think his panel layout, his storytelling are still top-notch. The action scenes are amazing, and the color work is done, you know, it's Andrew Dollhouse, so you know, that's no big surprise there that it's the colors are handled so well. Yeah, I kind of agree with you too as well about the whole political aspect of the book. Well, actually, let me take that back. It's Gabe Eltab on coloring, not Andrew Dahlhouse. Gabe Eltab is the same colorist from Sinestro that he worked on. So again, a very good relationship they've had in the colors on Sinestro. But Cosmic Book were always done really well. So translated over to here, done very well as well. But getting back to what I was saying about the whole political aspect of the book that Dan Abnett, the writer, is bringing into it, I love it. It's something that is interesting and intriguing, and you know, he talked about it at the Rebirth panel in, at WonderCon, about trying to reconcile these two halves of Aquaman, and the Aquaman Rebirth issue talked about that as well, how he has a foot in each world, yet neither world accepts him, and you know, he's trying to reconcile these two halves of himself. So I think it's a very interesting and relatable kind of take on Aquaman. I love Black Manta too, just like you, Nick. Going back to the days of the Super Friends cartoon, Challenges of Super Friends with the Legion of Boom, yeah. And he had that deep booming mechanical voice, and it was so great. But at this point, much like Doomsday and for you and Superman, I really wish he'd gone with a different villain here. I feel like ever since Black Manta showed up in Geoff Johns' run on Aquaman, and then from there it wasn't very long before we saw him have a prominent role in Forever Evil, and then from there he was in the new Suicide Squad, and from there now he's in this. It's like, part of the thing that was always so cool when Black Manta showed up was you didn't get to see him that often. And so at this point for me, I'm almost suffering from some Black Manta burnout. I hope that Dan Abnett can establish some new villains. And because Aquaman probably has the weakest rogue gallery of any of the Super Friends. He basically has Ocean Master and Black Manta. And you can't just recycle those two. You know, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, I could see that, because like that new Suicide Squad, when Black Manta was on the team, I remember reading that, and that I thought he was great in that. But that was the last time I saw Black Manta, so it's really great to see him again. And then the other thing with Dan Abnett that I hope he does, which I'm surprised we haven't seen it yet, is we haven't seen any reference to any Mr. Oz stuff in this book yet.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like, and that's very interesting considering that Dan Abnett is going to be writing the Titans book, which is probably one of the books that's going to tie in most closely with the Rebirth, the DC Rebirth actual story. So it'll be interesting to see at what point this Aquaman title does start to pull in some of those elements of Rebirth. It may not be until after, you know, this first storyline plays out, but I enjoyed the book. I think that Abnett is doing a good job of continuing what Geoff Johns started with the New 52 relaunch of Aquaman, which is making him not the butt of a joke, not the punchline, but showing how powerful he is. And you know, Geoff Johns did an incredible job with that, and Jeff Parker, who when he took over the book from Geoff Johns, continued with that. I think Manny would agree there. The Cullen Bunn, he tried to take a different take on the character. I don't know that it necessarily worked. You know, he was kind of run off the book by the Aquaman fans because they didn't like what he was doing. And he himself admitted that his story idea for the character, it probably wasn't the right story to tell with Aquaman. It was probably a story worth telling, but it just should have been a different character. So, you know, keeping that in mind, and then Abnett took over from Cullen Bunn, and he's continuing to definitely bring Aquaman, continue to raise his profile, and hopefully the movie when it comes out will be good, and people can go back and pick this title up, this Rebirth Aquaman title, and be happy and feel that it's a book that lives up to the cinematic version, the Jason Momoa version of Aquaman.
Yeah. One more question I have for both of you guys is, in this iteration of Aquaman, his costume design is very much what we've seen in the past. However, he looks like he has, like, his, you know, shirt or armor that he's wearing is like a crustacean. And I kind of like the classic chainmail looking costume design a little bit better. What did you guys think about the costume here?
Well, I had seen, because I'm friends with Brad Walker on Facebook, I had seen some of his drawings, and he, you know, he did have some people saying that they didn't like it or whatever. And then he ended up posting like some previous images of Aquaman and saying, if you didn't like it, you can blame like so and so because they came up with the idea first. But basically, he just wanted to. He felt that doing this style, where it's, you know, it's not like regular, like regimented, you know, all the circles being the same size and what have you, to make it this way, it would look more organic. It would look more like, mm-hmm. like pebbles on the ocean floor and what have you. And that he just felt that it suited the character better.
It's coral. It looks like, right, it's coral, exactly. on him or something like that.
Exactly. I can kind of see both ways. Here it is. It's for fans who don't like the way I draw Aquaman scales, yell at Underoos. They did it first, and he has a link to Underoos.com, and it shows a guy in Underoos. And yeah, so I kind of like it. It makes it a little more distinct. I feel like the old orange chainmail shirt was just kind of, I don't know, there wasn't anything that stood out about it, you know? And so I kind of like this new look just because it's something different and it makes it stand out a little more. What do you think, Manny?
It's fine. It didn't really bug me at all. It looks okay, but I neither love it nor hate it.
All right, fair enough. Well, let's talk about Detective Comics number 935. You go first, Manny, being the huge Batman fan that you are.
I really like the issue. I like the fact that it starts off with Batwoman training everybody in the clay chamber. I think that's what it was called, the clay chamber, that they have in their new HQ in the middle of Gotham. It was interesting that they binded Clayface so that he wouldn't be able to use his powers, that he would actually have to fight, and we clearly saw that didn't go very well. He has no fundamentals because he's just so used to slushing around as, well, clay. And so the fact that she's able to test him to their limits, I found really, really cool. And then she was able to point out everybody's flaws, even somebody like Orphan, who is such a skilled fighter. She was able to find flaws in all of them, and they all look pretty frustrated. The one thing that I'm gonna say that I want to see going forward is how much do they really respect Batwoman? Because usually they're used to being bossed around or trained by Batman or even Nightwing, who I think they look up to. But for Batman to bring somebody in, kind of an outsider, army bred character such as Batwoman, I wonder how much do they really respect her, or do they kind of just follow her lead because Batman said so? And right now it just really seems like that's, okay, well, Batman put her in charge, so that's why we're listening to her. Because there's a few moments where I thought that Tim was kind of like undermining her authority. And then as far as the Shadow Warriors and the Colony, that kind of has me hooked as to, just kind of like Tinian did in the weekly series that he did during the New 52s, want to see who they are and who's behind them. And I honestly would not mind if they kept that under wraps for a while and let it go on as far as they can, because that actually makes for, that's something that I liked from Eternal, where they where we just week to week we kept crossing people off the list, and then the next week adding them back on. I thought that was pretty cool. So we'll see where they go with that here. Other than that, I think that's it. So yeah, I didn't think I was gonna like this as much as I did. So another damn book that I have to pick up every 2 weeks.
All right, Nick, you're up.
You know what, Jace, you go ahead and go first, because I think I'm gonna be the downer on this one. So
all right,
you go ahead and talk about it here.
All right, so like Manny mentioned, did we read off the creative team for Aquaman? In case we didn't, writer Dan Abnett, pencils Brad Walker, inks Drew Hennessy, and colors Gabe Eltep. Detective Comics written by James Tynan IV. The pencils are Eddie Barrows. You have Iber Ferrari, hope I'm saying that right, on inks.
Ferrera. Yeah, I think you're right, Manny. Okay. Ferrera.
And Adriana Lucas on colors. So the art really done well, which is no surprise.
Yes.
You know, Eddie Barrows loved his work on Nightwing. But even more than his rendering, I love his layouts. They're not maybe as dynamic as some other people like Brett Booth, who's I think does the best layouts in the industry. But they're very unique, using different shaped panels. He often uses the bat symbol as the shape of a panel, and mm-hmm. plays with different perspective, different size, different orientations for the panel. So the layouts for me is where his art really shines. Specifically, I'll call out the next to last page, where the Batmobile kind of blows up and Batman's leaping out of it. And then he lands on the ground, looks over his shoulder, and there's the shadow army behind him. Yeah, very curious to find out what this army of shadows is all about. For me, that's the strength of the story. The Batman pages, Batman trying to unravel this mystery. The training thing, I kind of felt like I'd been there, done that. It wasn't horrible, but it wasn't, it didn't really do much for me. I thought the character moments, specifically with Tim Drake, were done well. Kind of interesting to see there. We see that there could be some friction based on what Tim Drake, the expectations that are placed on him are, as he's kind of a lieutenant in this newly formed Bat Army. But is that really, you know, what he wants to be doing? Or does he feel like he can be of more use somewhere else? So that's a little subplot that has me intrigued. But mostly it's just it's the mystery and Batman looking for answers where I feel like the strength of this book is. As far as the training of the actual people and Batwoman's role, I feel at this point it's a little weaker. It's not really holding my interest. And I don't know if that's just because they haven't really gone out in the field yet as a unit. Or if it's just that it's not, it's underwhelming me after being so excited hearing, Batman Boot Camp and Bat Team Book. It's just there hasn't been enough action with that team, with those characters yet to really to pull my interest. So kind of an up and down issue for me, but I definitely loved the scene at the end with Batman being attacked by the Army of Shadows, and I can't wait to find out more about who the big bad is going to be in this book. So yeah, that's it.
Yeah. I completely, I might as well start off with the good stuff. I completely agree with you on the artwork. Some of the standouts that I'm seeing is like the Jokers as they're kind of, as they shut down the Clayface room or the mud room or whatever they call it, the Jokers, how they dissolve into mud or whatever. I thought that was a really cool looking page. And then the way Eddie draws Batwoman on, especially on page 6, where you have this, Batwoman's face in the back corner, just gorgeous looking Batwoman. And especially the one where she's swinging in the air, I thought was really well done. I guess the reason why I'm not really jazzed about this from the beginning is because the lineup, I felt is just okay. I think it's really cool they included Clayface as well as Batwoman, but the others I just kind of don't really care about. Don't really know about Cassandra Cain, don't know a lot about Orphan. And then as far as the plot goes with this whole Batman, especially at the end, this army of Batman coming after Batman, I don't know kind of where he's going with it. And especially the end of the last issue, they had this mysterious man on the last page. You guys remember that?
Oh yeah.
So I'm thinking, I'm just kind of guessing out there, and I want to hear your speculation on it too. Is I'm thinking maybe the guy, the mysterious man behind the scenes, is Hush. What do you guys think? Where do you think this is leading?
It could be Hush. I kind of think it's going to be a new villain, though.
You think so? Okay.
Yeah, that's just my take. And I think part of the reason for that is that James Tynion has gone on record multiple times as saying, you know, this is the Bat story that he's been wanting to tell ever since he was a little kid. So I'm sure that, you know, when he came up with the idea, you know, it was with a brand new villain in mind. And so, you know, for that reason, I think it'll be a new villain. But, it could be Hush. I'm not sure. What do you think, Manny?
Since the beginning, since the first issue, my brain keeps screaming Arkham Knight. But I know that it can't be. I'm pretty sure it can't be Jason Todd. But the more it keeps going, like, the more my brain keeps screaming Arkham Knight. And I'm just like, no, it can't be. I don't think so. I really doubt it. It'd be too
simple.
You're
right. Hush is Jason Todd.
Well, no, Hush.
Totally forgot about that.
No. Hush is not. Right? Hush, originally, they made you think it was Jason Todd, but then it turned out to be
one of Bruce Wayne's
childhood friends. I can't think of his name. What's his name off the top of my head?
Oh, that's right. Okay.
It's been years since
I read that one.
Yeah, he grew up next to Bruce Wayne, kind of a twisted mirror version of him. Man, I cannot. What's his name, Manny? I want
to. Is his name Thomas also?
Yeah.
No.
I was thinking, yeah, for some reason that was popping into my head, but I cannot. Yeah, that's right. Thomas Elliot.
There you go. Elliot. That's the last name.
Yeah, Thomas Elliot. So.
It has to be somebody close to the Bat family, I would have to say, just because of the fact of how they were able to not only locate Batman, but also undermine his radars and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, in the Batmobile. Yeah,
and the fact that they have tumblers, I don't know if you guys noticed that.
Yeah.
he has the 1989 Batman Returns Batmobile with the cool, like, 1950s front on it.
Yeah.
And they have tumblers, which I thought was awesome.
Yeah, that was a cool little reference that they did there.
Very specifically, the image that kind of, like, screams Arkham Knight at me was when the guy, when the soldier with the big, like, shockwave gun is shooting at the Batmobile, it looks just like a scene from the game. But I don't want to jump to any conclusions. That's what it screams out to me.
They do look a little Arkham Knightish now that you mention it.
Yeah. Well done, sir. I think you might be right.
I kind of hope I'm not, but that way I'll be surprised. But I hope that he's leading me in the wrong direction. That way, because there's nothing better than flipping a page and going, "No way!" If I flip the page and it's actually him, I'm like, ah, damn it, I was right.
Well, it does say the next issue is Army of Shadows. And from the Arkham Knight game, did it mention anything about Army of Shadows at all?
I do not remember. I just think it was more of like a military thing.
Yeah, okay.
Between them. So, we'll see who it is. I love that Batmobile, though.
I guess, yeah. That's straight out of the animated series, so it doesn't surprise me that you would love it. All right, let's talk about Flash. Who wants to go first?
I would love to go first, because this one...
Yeah, go ahead.
The series so far has been fantastic. I haven't read a Flash book since New 52 when it first came out. And then I'm woefully behind on the TV show. I got to catch up with it. But so far, I am really digging the creative team on this book, which is Joshua Williamson, right?
Yep.
I think. Am I correct on that, Joshua Williamson?
Yep.
And Carmine D. Help me out with the last name.
I'm gonna Joshua Williamson didn't even pronounce it right at the WonderCon event. So yeah, it's pretty. It's actually Carmine D. Jean Domenico.
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's a mouthful. Carmine D. Jean Domenico. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm gonna just go with Carmine. His work is really blowing me away. I absolutely love this stuff. And it looks like he's a digital artist. Would I be correct on that?
Yeah, I believe so.
Colors
are by Yvonne Placentia.
Oh, okay. So some of the best digital art that I've seen in a long time, especially on that title page where he's getting struck by the lightning again. Really awesome stuff there. It's interesting, this whole plot that they're going with, how everybody that Barry Allen is interacting with so far, there's these like freak lightning strikes, and then Barry Allen himself gets struck again by lightning, is how the book opens up. And this issue, I really dug the action and panel layouts in this, where like he's running around and the lightning speed force lines follow him from panel to panel. I thought that was really cool. And it's just the panels itself are not your traditional boxes. They're all kinds of different weird shapes that bleed into the next panel. I thought it was really, really awesome to see. The other thing that I thought was an interesting choice was a lot of the dialogue scenes have white background behind the panels, right?
Yeah.
And then as you get towards the end of the book where, the suspense starts building, action starts building, they start filling in behind the panels with all this kind of, weird kind of like background digital art behind it that I felt really propelled the story along very quickly, especially with what's happening towards the end of the book as Barry's torn between trying to save a bunch of people in a burning building and trying to get to a very important like crime scene that is happening with his cop buddy who's about to get shot, right?
Yep.
I felt those last couple of pages at the end of the book just made this issue, I think, the best Rebirth issue of the week.
So you liked it, is what you're saying.
Oh, man. I thought that was great. I am definitely back on, being a huge fan of The Flash again, which is awesome, because, haven't read Flash in a long time.
All right, Manny, you're up. What'd you think?
Was that in the beginning? Did he get hit by lightning again, or was that a flashback
it
scene?
It was a flashback.
Was it a flashback scene? Okay. I apologize, guys. Yeah, I thought that was something new.
It says several years ago on the night of the storm.
Oh, there it is. Yeah. You're right. Apologize.
And then on that title page, it says, after the title page, when it first shows him in the Flash costume, it says, if you notice, it says today.
Oh, there we go. Yep.
Yeah. All right, go ahead, Manny.
I'm not sure. I kind of have mixed feelings about this issue. I kind of feel like I've read it before or seen it before, and you know, with him just running around being insecure, it feels like I've seen it before, and I'm kind of waiting for it to progress a little bit to get to Godspeed and to get to the storm that we're supposed to get. So to me, it was kind of a more of a brief introduction back into the Flash and getting him back into his own story. I like the way that they did address the events that had happened before. Like, yes, we understand that the Flash and Wally West are involved with the events of the DC Rebirth special and what happened in the first Rebirth, and he's off with Titans. But until we uncover more information, you know, this is the story now. That I thought that was done well. I do agree that the paneling that they do throughout the book is really cool. Same thing with the also mentioned the Speed Force falling around panel to panel. That was pretty cool. But other than that, I didn't care too much for the artwork either. It was okay. In a scale of 1 to 10, it's like a 6 for me. I didn't enjoy it as much as some of the other books that I read this week. It's not until towards the end where he's making that where he's trying to save the people from the building, burning building, and save his friend that it kind of got me a little bit interested. But I wonder now if his friend is the one who's going to turn into Godspeed or what, because as I remember from the WonderCon panel, it's people making choices of what they're going to do with their powers and how to use it, and what do you do when everybody else is also fast. It was okay. It wasn't the greatest. It wasn't the worst. But I am interested in the story, and I am going to keep reading it.
However, Manny, just on page 13, like at the top of it, like, tell me this would not be cool to see in, you know, a Flash movie or the Justice League movie, where he starts running and he busts out his suit, right? And the way they draw it makes it seem like he runs into his suit and it's like forming around his head and everything. I thought that was really awesome, and like, I really hope to see that in the Justice League movie. That would be really cool to see.
I think you might get lucky and you might see that on TV, because I know that Cisco had already been asking about the ring and how it works. But mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, that is pretty cool. That is something that's always been one of the cooler aspects of the Flash, is the fact that he has his suit in his ring, and that he kind of like runs into it. So yeah. I kind of hope that this upcoming season that's where he's going to have his suit in the ring. But I know that it's been brought up a couple of times on television. So that's something that I also want to see.
I found it interesting that they put that in the book, because if you remember in the Flash Rebirth issue, one of the things Wally notices is that Barry's wearing the ring, and he's like, "Oh, you're wearing the ring?" Because he had forgotten. One of the things that was established when Wally West was the Flash was that he could use the Speed Force to alter the clothing he was wearing.
So that's right.
He could just like think about it, and his clothes would turn into the costume. And he didn't have to use the ring, so it's interesting that they're keeping that aspect at least so far. Overall, I thought the issue was really good. You know, the Flash Rebirth issue, I loved for the story more so than the artwork. I don't know if it's just because Carmody's work is starting to grow on me, or if I just felt he did a better job. But it didn't the the artwork, while not my favorite, because it's not my style, it's a little messy, and I prefer cleaner lines. But yeah, I did enjoy the art more in this issue than I did in the first issue. And, you know, bear in mind that Brett Booth is one of my favorite artists. You know, I said earlier in the episode that I think he does the best panel layouts of anybody working in comics right now. So Carmody's got a tough act to follow. That being said, his artwork does remind me a little bit of Francis Manapul. And I think a lot of that probably has to do with the way the colors are handled here. More of a watercolor feel. And then also because, like you said, Manny, a little bit derivative, the story with the Barry being insecure. You know, we saw that in Francis and Brian Buccioletto. We saw that in their run when they started co-writing Flash with the New 52. But I really enjoyed the character moments. You know, they're Joshua Williamson is delving much more into kind of the CSI kind of aspect of Barry Allen, which I enjoy. And I kind of feel like Carmody's art, I enjoy it more when it's Barry Allen rather than the Flash. I feel like the character moments and his storytelling are better, and his facial expressions are better when it's just Barry, you know, being Barry. That being said, as far as the story, the story really ramped up toward the end of the issue. I also wonder if this guy August is going to end up being Godspeed, and definitely ready to get started to start seeing these people being struck by the Speed Force, and see where that goes and how Barry deals with that. But yeah, I'm ready for him to be a little more confident, because like you said, Manny, I just feel like, yeah, we did this whole self-doubt thing, and he came out of it and was a stronger hero for it. And so it kind of seems like, you know, we're taking a step backwards a little bit. But overall, yes. Pretty good story. And, you know, I do think Joshua Williamson is a good writer. So and I think The Flash is going to be an important book in the DC Rebirth. So I'm definitely going to keep reading this one.
What did you guys think?
What's that? Yeah.
What did you guys think of this black hole group of baddies? Is this a new concept, or have we seen the black hole before?
No, not anything I'm familiar with at all. It's got to be something brand new.
Okay.
I just, their look wasn't very inspired, in my opinion. You know, guys in armor. It's just it was. It didn't feel like anything exciting.
Yeah, I didn't think of it as too much any, just kind of a filler.
Yeah, I mean, they'll probably end up being important to the story, but I just I thought that their design could have been a little bit better.
I was not sure if this was, like, you know, old characters or not.
No, not anyone I recognize anyway. All right, okay. On to the last book then, gentlemen.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you go first, Nick.
Wonder Woman. Haven't been a big Wonder Woman reader throughout my whole life. So I wanted to try this out, given that it is Greg Rucka. However, with the first issue and then this one that just came out, Greg Rucka just hasn't sucked me into it. I felt the story so far is just kind of boring, in my opinion, not really going anywhere. The artwork is decent enough. However, I think the artwork is kind of flat and dull in some spots, where it's like a little bit overuse on shadows on some of the pages. And, you know, this whole storyline of Wonder Woman internal dialogue talking about how she's got all these memories, but she's not sure which memories are correct, and talking about the whole Rebirth tie-in. I didn't care for this book at all. I don't think I will be continuing reading Wonder Woman, unfortunately.
All right, fair enough. How about you, Manny?
Well, I feel that I'm already quite invested in this story, just because of the events that happen in Justice League Dark Side War. I think from that point on, how the story kind of was centered around Wonder Woman. She's the one who started the dialogue, and then also it ends with her discovery of that she has a brother, and so on. I feel like because of that, I'm actually a little bit more invested in wanting to know what's going to happen with her and her brother, and then also trying to reclaim her real past, because I mean, is she made out of clay? Was she born? What's, you know, this issue, she can't find Temiscira. I can see how maybe if you haven't gone that far back, how it could seem like quite a dull issue. But it was okay. Not much happened. I mean, you kind of saw that Steve Trevor is working with the government, fighting off what seems to be some set of bad guys, a guerrilla unit or something, and then also that Wonder Woman's looking for Cheetah for help as to finding herself. So not the greatest, but like I said, because I'm invested from as far back as Dark Side War, and because also I'm interested in seeing how the stories are going to work with the first issue of the month being telling one part of the story, and then the second one telling a different part of the story. I'm interested to see how that's gonna play out. So not the greatest, but gonna keep reading just because I'm curious.
Well, I loved it. It totally blew me away. For me, the worst part about it is the fact that it's actually in 3 weeks. Wonder Woman 2 is gonna come out, and that's gonna be the first issue with Greg Rucka working with Nicola Scott and telling the year one. So I'm gonna get no more movement on this story for a whole month. Right, until Lies Part 2, which won't be till July 27th. So that's actually the week after San Diego, even. So that's the worst part for me. I thought the artwork, I can see how it would come across as a little flat. I think that has more to do with the coloring than the actual artwork, because...
Yeah, it's definitely the color.
Yeah, and I think... It kind of fits with the mood that Rucka and the artist Liam Sharp are trying to establish here. It's definitely not a bright book, but man, when you use the word artwork, you know, in a comic, you know, a lot, it's you don't really consider. I mean, it's art, but it's not what people think of as, let's say, fine art. To me, the art in this book is fine art. It is done so well. I love the look of Steve Trevor with the beard. I love the look of Wonder Woman. It just the villagers, the backgrounds. I mean, the art is just amazing in this book. Really.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
That last page with you know, Wonder Woman.
Oh yeah, that last page.
I mean, holy moly, Liam Sharp is just killing it, man. I cannot sing his praises highly enough. What a gorgeous book this is. The story itself, I feel like it didn't move along as far as I would have liked. Much like Action Comics, it's kind of like there are more questions than answers. Especially like it's hard to understand with what's going on with Etta Candy and Steve Trevor, and they're in the same African country that Wonder Woman happens to be in. She's searching for Barbara Minerva, the Cheetah. Is one thing connected to the other? Why can't she find Themyscira? I mean, definitely more questions than answers. And the fact that, like I said, I gotta wait a whole, even though it's a bi-weekly book, I'm gonna have to wait a whole month till we get more of this. So I'm definitely looking forward to it. I'm in on Wonder Woman. But that being said, I will kind of, to a lesser extent, say that I feel like, you know, the same way as I do with Action Comics, but just a little bit to a lesser extent, is that I want to get answers like sooner than later. That's just kind of a personal preference for me. So I hope it's not, hope Rucka doesn't drag, you know, I mean, I don't need all the answers to know exactly what's going on, but I would like the pacing of the story to pick up. I hope it picks up a little bit in the when we get to issue 3 and we get to the lies, as this first story arc is called, part 2. So I should also mention, you know, I think we've mentioned all of them, but just in the interest of full disclosure, so Greg Rucka is handling the writing duties. We have Liam Sharp as the artist, and then the colors are by Laura Martin, who she is an award-winning colorist. And although, yeah, the colors in the book do appear to be a little bit flat, I think it does add to the realism of the book, and I'm sure it's on purpose. It's no disparaging comment against Laura Martin at all. I think that the muted colors of the book, as I said, it kind of helps to set the mood. It's a somber book. It's a serious book. And it certainly is a big departure from the most recent run of Wonder Woman by Meredith Finch and her husband David Finch handling the art on that, which I felt personally was just about the most super heroic I've ever seen Wonder Woman, or most super heroic run I'd ever seen. And at that point was my favorite run of Wonder Woman that's ever been done. So we'll see how I feel if that continues to be the case, or if this run by Greg Rucka, Liam Sharp, and Nicola Scott overtakes it. But yeah, it's I'd say this was probably my favorite book of the week. Yeah, out of the five. So it's interesting how different our opinions were coming at it.
Yeah, no kidding. I think it's because you guys definitely have a lot more context with with the character. You know, like I said, man, I haven't read a lot of Wonder Woman at all. So, but you know, with Rebirth, I wanted to give everything a try, but this one just didn't hook me.
Yeah, I think you owe it to yourself, Nick, to read issue mm-hmm. 2, because in case you're not aware, they're going to be telling 2 different stories. So this is the current story with Wonder Woman trying to discover what her true origins are. And then every other issue will be a different artist. It'll be Nicola Scott, whose art, I think, and that book
will be right.
That book will be much brighter.
She's on Black Magic.
Right, exactly.
Image book.
And this is basically,
great artist.
This is her dream project. Wonder Woman, you know, I've met Nicola several times. She's a friend. Love her artwork, and she's an amazing person mm-hmm. as well. But she will tell you that the character of Wonder Woman is the whole reason she is an artist. Wonder Woman mm-hmm. is the reason that she wanted to work in comics, and every other issue where they do the Wonder Woman Year One, I'm sure the colors are going to be a lot brighter. It's going to be much more of a traditional kind of look, I think you definitely pick up that and then we'll see. Can compare and contrast. That'll be interesting.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I totally forgot that Nicola Scott was jumping on this book.
Go ahead, Manny.
Also, if you haven't had a chance to read Justice League Dark Side War, that actually helps out a lot, because if I hadn't read Dark Side War, I don't think I'd be as invested in Wonder Woman right now as I am.
Well, and did you read the Wonder Woman Rebirth?
Yeah.
Did you read the Wonder Woman Rebirth, Nick?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point, Manny, because that's definitely something I need to go back and read, because I was with the DC Rebirth issue itself when they talk about Wonder Woman's long lost brother, Jason, I think.
Yeah,
I was pretty confused at that portion of the book, but it was a small portion of the book. I just kind of, you know, forgot about it.
All right, so
go ahead,
Manny.
Yeah, I mean, if you pick up Dark Side War, you're gonna kind of understand the Wonder Woman, how she found out about her background, her brother, and then also you'll get a good look at Steppenwolf. He's in that as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then also a little bit more on you get a taste of the whole Watchmen thing in the epilogue of Dr. Manhattan, and also you get a little bit more on the quote unquote reveal of the three Jokers that'll play. So it's a pretty important book. It's probably Jason and I talked about it on Saturday, and
that episode went out today.
Definitely worth the read.
Okay, if we had to rate each of these Rebirth books, what would you say? So, like Wonder Woman, I would give like a 3. I felt it was just kind of okay.
3 out of 10.
That's a 3 out of 5.
3 out of 5. Okay. Oh. All right, I'm going to give it a 5.
Okay.
I'm going to give it a 4.
Okay. And then Detective Comics. Jace, what do you say?
For that, I'll give it a 3.5.
I would give that one a 3 as well. Manny, what say you?
I'm at a 3.5.
Let's go. The Flash. Let's go to the Flash. Jace, what do you say?
I think for me that was probably the weakest this week. I'd probably give it maybe a 2.5. It really didn't do much for me.
I'm gonna give it a low 3.
Flash, I would give a 5. I really enjoyed it. Aquaman, Jace?
I'd give it a solid 4. I think it's a really good start. I think it probably even would have been a 4.5 if it would have been a different villain. Just, like I said, I'm suffering some Black Manta fatigue over here.
I would say 4.5 for Aquaman.
I would have given it a 5 if the artwork didn't bug me a little bit.
Yeah,
but if they would have fixed those little things, it would have been a solid 5. But because of that, I got to give it a 4.5.
Nice. And then Action Comics, Jace, what do you say?
I'll give Action Comics a 3.5. Good, solid issue. I'm just ready for some of the answers to start rolling out.
Nice, Manny. What would you say for Action?
I'd give it 3.5. But it's mostly based on the merit of artwork, because the story kind of did frustrate me, the fact that it was just a lot of action.
Yeah, I would give it a 4 based on the artwork on that one.
So from everything I'm hearing, it sounds like Aquaman was your favorite book of the week, Manny. Flash was yours, Nick, and I was on the Wonder Woman bandwagon.
Yeah, that's
fair to say. All right. Well, I think overall, Rebirth continues to be very good. as much as I wasn't hating on the New 52 like so many people were, the quality of stories overall, from the best DC book that I've read since Rebirth started to the worst DC book I've read since Rebirth started, the entire line, I feel like the quality of everything, the bar has been raised. Would you agree with that, Manny?
Yeah, I definitely have to agree. I mean, I haven't picked up. I'm yet to pick up a Rebirth title and say this is crap. So, I mean, everything to some degree is definitely stepped up. Granted, some books are a little different, like The Flash, because, I mean, you tell me, Jace, you were used to that, you know, that rock solid creative team that they had for a while. So it's kind of weird to get a change.
Yeah, tough act to follow. That may be why for me Flash was the weakest. You know, it's just Matt was so good with you know our friends working on.
I mean, those guys are on Titans now, right?
Yeah.
So, they're still around, but
yeah, the art team is on Titans. Brett Booth.
Yeah, the art. That's what I mean.
And Andrew Dollhouse. Van Jensen is not currently writing any DC books, and Robert Venditti is writing the Hal Jordan Green Lantern book, which we haven't seen yet, hasn't come out yet.
Awesome. Yeah, I am really digging Rebirth so far. I think it's a much better start than New 52. And exactly, I share the same sentiments as Manny, where there hasn't been a book that's been just absolute crap, where, you know, back in New 52, there were some books like that. Even with this Wonder Woman, like, it didn't interest me, but it's certainly not crap at all. But it just didn't get me at all. But everything so far.
Yeah, we'll see how you feel how you feel after issue two, and maybe there you'll decide you're only going to buy every other issue, just to read the Nicholas Scott.
Right, yeah, that's right. Yeah. So far, great start for DC.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us on this what ended up being a supersized episode. If you'd like to visit us at thecomicsourceblog.com, we'd really appreciate that. You can find all past episodes of the podcast there. You can watch episodes of our YouTube channel there, as well as finding Manny's written blog, my written blog, and, of course, our famous sketch gallery. If you follow us along on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource, that's the best way to keep up to date when new episodes are released. You can eavesdrop on my conversations with other comic creators there. It's really the easiest way to keep up to date with what's going on with the Comic Source. We also have a Facebook page. Just do a search for the Comic Source on Facebook. That's us. We're also on Instagram, which is the best way to follow us when we're at a convention, as we post pictures of interviews we're doing and people we're talking to and great costumes that we see. So, once again, thanks for joining us, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.
Good night.